This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 121. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars on KSL. We recap the Texas game and some of its highlights. Greg tells us about what he thinks about the offense and the potential of this team going forward. I'm then joined by my brother Matt to recap that same great game against Texas. We sing the praises of Taysom Hill and the defense, as well as the offensive line. We also give our early thoughts on what we think might be coming against Utah. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can always download us on iTunes. You should definitely check us out at LoyalCougars.com, and you will listen to us, we hope, right now. Well, it was a big week for BYU football, and I thought there was no better way to talk about this game than to invite on our old friend Greg Rebell. Greg, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Good to be with you again.
I do have one warning to let you know. Jerem Jordan came on the show a couple weeks ago, and he said one of his goals in life is to appear on this podcast more times than you, which he's got a ways to go, I told him, but he's, you know, setting his sights high.
Well, ultimately, I guess that's in your hands now. You can invite Jerem on every week for the next couple of years, and he'll probably catch me.
That's what I told him. That's what I told him. So he's going to have to, buy me a nice dinner when I'm out in Utah next time to make that happen. But anyway, so Texas, big game, came in. I think most fans' expectations, mine included, were pretty low coming into this one just because of how poor the offense had looked against Virginia, and kind of hoping for a low-scoring defensive game that maybe we make a couple of plays. That is not what we got. So Greg, tell me what we really saw here. Is this offense as good as it showed against Texas? Was this kind of fluke? It seems like the national press is a lot attributing this to just poor defense by Texas. Where's the truth in here? Is it somewhere in the middle? How do we as fans make sense of these first two games?
Well, I think we saw the motivation that adversity provides. The Virginia game was scheduled as a win. I know that, neither Tom nor Bronco would ever say that, but they scheduled that game to come back 1-0 and face Texas, knowing that a win there could be the springboard to, a special season. I mean, if Jamal Williams catches that ball on 3rd and 6 in Charlottesville, BYU's 2-0 and maybe in the top 20 today. And the thoughts of that special season or a BCS run would be alive and well. The loss to Virginia was in, I believe it was Kyle Van Noy's words to us postgame on Saturday, humbling. The team was humbled. The team realized that as much theory and optimism went into, projections of how the offense would perform, it still needed to go and make plays, and not enough were made. And even a defense that not only kept BYU in the game with Virginia, but should have been good enough to win that game with Virginia, wasn't enough to save BYU from itself when the offense and special teams ended up giving the Cavaliers two short fields, and the offense gave the Cavaliers two crucial points on a field goal right before, or on a safety off that block punt. I beg your pardon, that safety off the fumble near its own goal line. The block punt resulted in the one of the touchdowns to which I referred. And ultimately, as good as the defense played, if it had only one letdown all day against UVA, it was in that drive right before halftime, as the Cavaliers drove 42 yards in 57 seconds to kick a 53-yard field goal. And in a three-point game, you could say that was the difference in the game. But never do you expect to hold a team to 3 yards per play and run 93 plays yourself and not win the game. And so, for BYU to stagger back from Charlottesville with that result was more than humbling. It was a real shock to the system, and the shock resulted in a week of practice that, from my understanding, was as intense as they've had in recent memory, and with as many jobs up for grabs and as many guys potentially demoted, especially up front, And it really brought a lot of people to a clearer understanding of what's needed to win a football game. And I think Taysom Hill embodied that single-mindedness as much as anybody this past week. When there was a third down and a play to be made, Taysom Hill made that play. And not with his arm, because BYU's not been a good third down passing team this year, but with his legs, as he's been proven, to have both the ability and the desire and urgency to get to the sticks and move the chains when needs be. And something was missing week one in Charlottesville. Taysom wasn't as aggressive. He wasn't as willing to make that play. Kyle Van Noy said himself that he was disgusted with his own effort against Virginia. And it may have looked, I guess, normal in the stat line, but something to me that day about Kyle just appeared a little bit off. And maybe Kyle and Taysom, between the two of them, I think took on a notable amount of responsibility and then put that to good use in the second week. Because I think if both guys were a little bit off in week one, I think we both would acknowledge they were. The same two players were maybe the two most important players in week two in helping to get BYU back on the winning track. And I know that, you know, Texas has taken critics for its scheme and for its, you know, coaching defensively. But come on, man, we all know the kind of players Texas puts on the field. And I don't know that there will be a more talented team BYU faces this year than those collection of bodies Texas put on the field on Saturday. So I've heard about bad angles and bad tactics and no adjustments, but you know, Taysom Hill and teammates like Jamal Williams were running through and around some pretty talented players, and there has to be some credit given.
Yeah. So how do we rate Taysom's one of the problems, not problem, but just kind of one of the things with BYU football is we've been a passing team my entire fandom, and so even in the aftermath of this awesome win over a 15th ranked team and, you know, taking it to them and huge day rushing, the thought seems to be, and we got a couple of questions like this, Greg, directed when I said we were doing this podcast on Twitter about the passing game and can we really win if we're completing 33% of our passes and those kind of thoughts. And a lot of folks are kind of focusing in on that hey, we won't play defense as poorly coached as Texas again and things like that. Is this just, I mean, I think there's a legitimate concern about the passing game, certainly, but is this more about the passing game or more about us as fans not adjusting to the fact that this season the offense is likely to look very different than any offense that BYU has had? Maybe 2001 would be the closest corollary just because of Luke Staley and Brandon Doman, but even then, I think this is a different offense than anything I've seen since I've been watching BYU football.
Well, I have a few thoughts on this, and I'll see if I can arrange them in some kind of cohesive order without losing my place. But first of all, if BYU passes for 33% accuracy and the Cougars lose, I'm concerned. If the Cougars pass for 33% accuracy and BYU beats Texas 40-21, I don't care as much. And I think that's ultimately it. If you're gaining yards and scoring points and beating good teams, I don't care how it gets done. And Bronco Mendenhall, being point number two here, Bronco Mendenhall noted that, you know, BYU football in the past was, you know, pass first, pass to set up the run. And he said, now, the way we're playing, the pass game is complementary. And I think, you know, the Sooner fans, come to some sort of understanding within themselves that that's okay. All will be well as long as BYU continues to, you know, roll up the yards and score points and keep people healthy. The pass game can be complementary on very successful teams. I mean, a lot of teams have been good enough to win national championships without being prolific passing teams. I mean, there's no law out there that says you must pass the ball, you know, in some kind of, to a certain standard to be a winning team. Even Oregon, for all the flash of that team, is a very ground-based attack. And when people draw correlations between BYU and Arizona or Oregon, they're not talking about, aerial attacks here and sky-high 450-yard passing games. Big passing games can happen, but there's a lot of running going on. And the current BYU offense is kind of developing in stages. And Bronco said the first stage was to get everybody trying hard at the same time, playing with a consistent level that maybe wasn't there in Charlottesville. The next step was to reconfigure and get more out of the offensive line and produce more in the run game. They got that against Texas. The next step is to get the pass game producing more. Certainly 33% isn't conducive to long-term success. But I would argue that Taysom's numbers would already be better if the guys catching the ball were doing so at a higher level. I've been disappointed to see as many drop balls as we have in the first 2 weeks. If there's one thing that BYU did in the last couple of years, it was really reduce the drop rate. We saw fewer drops in the last couple of years than we had previous, and now we've seen drops again be an issue. Taysom's been wayward on enough passes, true, but he's also been on the money with enough passes that should have been caught to not have me, you know, so concerned about Taysom's accuracy that I don't think he can throw the football. I think he's a good passer and will get better. He was a 59% passer last year as a freshman. I expect him to be in the 60s as a sophomore. Two games in is too small a sample size to get too concerned about Taysom's accuracy issues. And again, I think receivers, shoulder some of the blame for that number being where it is. He made one pass last week that just based on his numbers, you would think maybe not be a wise one. You might remember it. I think he's rolling out to the right, and he whistles a pass in between two defenders, as I recall.
Yes, I remember that one.
I mean, that was a great throw. I mean, it was gunned, and it had to go in a keyhole, and he hit it. And I don't think that's a fluke for him. I think that's who he is. So I see a pass like that, and I go, you know what? BYU's going to be just fine, and Taysom Hill will be just fine. I think what go fast, go hard does is get everybody, doing things maybe just a half step, quicker than they might do so in their comfort zone. And that goes for quarterbacks. And you do get a little bit sometimes just, you know, with the adrenaline of the moment and just kind of go, you know, a pass can sail or a pass could drop on you or fall short on you. And that's bound to happen. But I don't think he's nearly what his numbers show to this point. And again, a lot of good teams have gotten a lot of good places with a run-heavy game. And for the time being, we see that BYU could have that as a primary strength. We got to remember that Cody Hoffman is working his way back from injury. Had he been healthy at Charlottesville, and I don't even think he's fully all the way back yet. We might be talking about a 2-0 team right now instead of a 1-1 team. And again, it's amazing when you think about it, Adam, how much a difference just one play makes.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
BYU is a converted 3rd-and-6 in the rain away from being 2-0 and probably top 20. You know, that's a pretty fine margin. I mean, BYU goes from being one of those, again, early radar teams at 2-0, and because of one slippery ball or one play call, however you want to look at it, they're not there. They're now 32nd and battling back from 1-1. It's the same team. It's the same bunch of guys on the difference of one throw of the football. So the truth about BYU is that they're good enough to beat a really talented team, maybe more talented than BYU will see the rest of the year, and that they should have beaten the first team they played but didn't for a combination of reasons that in the end helped inspire the performance in the second game. You know, maybe BYU's 1-1 anyway. You know, I think a lot of people would have thought that 1-1 after two games would be an understandable outcome with the outcomes flipped, though, with a win in Charlottesville and a loss to Texas. So I still maintain that the first three games were going to tell us a great deal about what this team is going to look like, you know, for the rest of the season. And I still think that. I think once you get through the Utah game, you'll have a pretty decent indication of where BYU can go. And, I still kind of stick to that.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of that game, Greg, we've got obviously.
And Adam, I often do this. I have like a loose thought dangling, and it hits me right as you start talking.
It's my favorite part of our discussions, Greg. So go ahead.
But the loss to Virginia, I sort of have come to a belief that it's only going to really matter. That loss is only going to really matter in one of two ways. while noting that the reason it matters most is because I think it helped them play better against Texas. But that is said, you know, that aside, I think the loss to Virginia only matters if you're if you end up 5-7. Okay, if you finish your regular season 5-7, but you know you should have been 6-6 because of that game and going to a bowl game, then I think it really comes back, you know, to bother you. Or if you finish 10-2 when 11 and you know when 11-1 might have gotten, you know, could have gotten you into the BCS, then it really bothers you. But for the time being, it's just a loss that helped the team play better, and we can't really tell what ultimately it's going to the impact it will have till the end of the season. But you know, if you go 9-3, 8-4, 7-5, 6-6, it'll just be one of the games you played that you wish you had back. But if it ends up being the difference between bowl game or no bowl game, or BCS bowl game or no BCS bowl game, yeah, you're going to go, oh, how did that one happen?
Yeah.
Because you just, the more you look back, you just go, how did they not get out of there with the win? As good as they played, you know, if you're good enough to beat Texas by 19, you know, how do you lose to Virginia by 3? You know, and sometimes you just can't make sense of it. Jerry Sloan said, you can't play the game backwards, and you just can't. You have to put it somewhere and let it go and simply live to play the next day. And credit to these guys, Adam. That's the biggest thing. Credit to these coaches and players, because, you know, if they were like me and hung on to the Virginia game a day or two too long, you know, maybe they don't beat Texas.
Right.
You know, and so I really applaud what they did. And again, it kind of shows the genius of Bronco Mendenhall. Yes. You know, you're frustrated that he, you know, either didn't, you know, manage the game, like he says, as well as maybe he should have, or that his coordinator didn't call a certain play at a certain time, or that the officials didn't place the ball in a puddle at a certain time, or that somebody just didn't squeeze the ball a little tighter at a certain time. And you wonder about all these things, and you go back and you just kind of, you know, punish yourself. But in the meantime, they had the number 15 team in the country bearing down on them. They had to be better, and they were a ton better. And so, you know, this week just feels a lot different for the program. And, you know, you're 1-1 now, and no one says you have to lose again. No one says you have to lose another game. You know, nothing's ordained that you have to drop another game. And a one loss, I said it before we talked about this, Adam. I thought this year's schedule was BCS worthy with one loss. You could lose one game and play in the BCS as long as someone else out there didn't rip off a 12-0 season and kind of take your place. But this schedule will have enough respect that if BYU got hot and just kept on winning and winning and winning, they'd be in the mix at the end. And I think 11-1 with this schedule would be BCS worthy. Now, I'm not predicting it, and I'm not saying they're going to win every game, but I'm simply saying they've only got one. And if they don't get any more, they can be, you know, close to where they wanted to be this year, Virginia notwithstanding. A lot to come between now and such a scenario, but, you know, again, no one says you have to lose again. And nobody thought they'd beat Texas by 19. So there.
Well, and it wouldn't be the first time in BYU history, or as you mentioned with NIU last year, college football history, where an early season loss becomes one of the only or maybe one or two blemishes on your entire season.
Boise State last year. Okay, remember, they lost their first game of the year, right, to Michigan State.
Yeah.
Until they lost to San Diego State, they were on pace to get back in again. I mean, if they beat San Diego State and finished the season with one loss, they were getting in. Northern Illinois wasn't, you know. And so, you know, even that team is a good example where Boise was. Yeah, the early season loss happens, then you bounce back and you hope to get on a roll. And that's what BYU's got to be thinking now. And the one thing that tells me that it's, you know, not outside the realm of possibility to consider is that I thought Texas would be the most talented team they saw this year. Now, they may not be the best team. I think Wisconsin, even though they've kind of played two patsies in the first 2 weeks, Wisconsin looks like they're as well put together a team as BYU is going to see the rest of the way. But I thought that if you could beat Texas, and certainly if you can beat Texas by 19 and put up almost 700 yards, you may be good enough to beat a lot of the teams on your schedule. Yeah, that's not too much of a stretch to say.
Right.
And so I really think the Texas win sets BYU up for some very good things if they can just keep their head straight and be businesslike and doing what they're hoping to do. and certainly keep Taysom Hill healthy. But, I mean, come on, Phil Steele had Texas ranked number 4 in his preseason, and Phil's a guy that will do as much, you know, breakdown of metrics as anybody in the game, and the experience factor alone with Texas led many to believe this would be a special year for them. Now, they weren't very good defensively last year, and they have slipped, and like Bronco said, they didn't fire Manny Diaz on one game. This was a culmination of things. But with as much talent as you get in Austin, and the fact you've got 19 positional starters back, and you have the most experienced team in the country by some metrics, that's a really quality win for BYU. What I really hope is that Texas figures itself out, beats Ole Miss like a drum, and gets back and gets centered and gets on a roll again. Because if things kind of go south here early, it could be a spiral for the Longhorns and for Mack Brown.
Yeah, no, it absolutely could. I thought the same thing at the end of that game. So this could get worse, but I hope it'll make us make BYU look a lot better if they put things together for the rest of the season. Yeah.
Because I'm not sure Virginia can. I don't know that Virginia. I don't know that UVA is better than, you know, a 2-win team in the ACC. I just think you're going to look back at that game and go, how on earth? Because I didn't see much there. I didn't see much of a threat from Virginia at all. And maybe it's credit to BYU's defense. They made them look that bad. But I just didn't see how Virginia had enough to beat what I thought was a really talented team offensively in BYU. And the fact that BYU didn't put it together, again, it would be one of those you just shake back, you know, look back and just shake your heads. I really hope it doesn't mean the difference between something really special and something average for BYU this year, because that's a tough one to have to live with.
Yeah, that one could haunt. But like you said, or like Jerry Sloan said, you can't play them backwards. Right. So, well, Greg, well, thanks for coming on the podcast. As always, love your perspective. I don't think Jerem's going to catch you, so I don't. Not that you would lose sleep over that, but
well,
rest
anybody
assured.
If anybody catches me, I want it to be, you know, I'd love it to be Jerem. I mean, you know, you may or may not know the story, but back in the day, many years ago, 15, 20 years ago, thereabouts, I had a sports talk show on KSL in Salt Lake City at night, and Jerem, as a high school student in the area, would be a frequent caller to my program, and became gained his own notoriety for being the being the clever high school kid with the stats, and would occasionally help guest with me. And so I kind of, you know, at that point, you know, kind of philosophically adopted Jerem as one of my own in terms of the sportscasting, you know, industry and business, and hoped he would do well with his desires and dreams. And certainly, you know, he's done much of what he's wanted to do at this point. And so I'm a big Jerem Jordan fan, and will, of course, always wish him well as he grows up in this business, and do whatever I can for him at all times. And so if I have to, you know, give my crown up at some point, I'd be happy to have him wear it, no doubt.
Yeah, worthy successor, at least he's hoping he can do that. And he actually listens, so he's gonna hear all this. So, well, Greg,
he's earned everything he's gotten in this business. He's really sharp and
yes,
talented. And everything he's doing with the BYU TV shows up in quality productions, and he and his wife and new young family are just special people. And so I'm a huge fan of Jerem and his family. And again, you know, a great guy to have on as a guest for you, obviously, and to continue a relationship over the years, because he'll really benefit your audience as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for coming on. And I'll tell you what, we will definitely have you on again sometime this season, hopefully to discuss another big win.
Well, I know why I'm popular for you. It's because you can ask me one question, go make a sandwich, and come back, and I'll still be talking.
Well, actually, so I put my three girls.
It allows you to do something. It allows you to get some work done while you're ostensibly, you know, doing a podcast. And so I know that's why you like me. I'm so long-winded that I actually allow you to do things while you're doing this. And so it's okay, though. I accept it, and I realize my own frailties and long-windedness is one of them, and thankfully you tolerate it. So there.
Well, I put all three girls to bed while you were talking, so it was
fantastic
multitasking.
Yep. read a few books to them. I know how it goes. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks. Anytime. See you, Adam.
Matt, Rise and Shout podcast. We're part of LoyalCougars.com. Yes, we are. I thought there should be like a cheer there.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Part of Loyal Cougars. And Matt, we have gained a significant amount of new listeners, I think.
Oh, I thought you were going. I thought you were going somewhere else with that. I was a little worried you were going to get personal.
I don't even know where you were going with that joke. The point is, we've gained some new listeners. So as we do every, what are you talking about? Hello, Matt.
Yeah, I'm back.
Did we lose you there for a second?
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
All right. So getting back to the important matters, Matt, we've got this podcast here. I'm Adam, you're Matt, we're brothers. I'm broadcasting from Minnesota, you're broadcasting from Texas. Neither of us have any qualifications whatsoever to run a BYU podcast, besides the fact that we're diehard fans. But yet, here we are, almost three years later, still podcasting.
It's pretty crazy. I expected us to make it three or four episodes when we started this.
Yes. Yes, and here we are. So, Matt, this has been one of the craziest weeks, I think, to be a BYU fan. I think we went from the depths of despair, maybe the pit of despair. What is that in Princess Bride?
You can throw on a little Princess Bride.
Pit of despair. Don't ever think of escaping. Ah. Anyway, we went from feeling like that, from having, you know, the... That death machine raised to 100 on us, to elation, Matt, of beating Texas, and not just beating them, but slamming them. So a couple of days afterwards, we're recording this on Tuesday night. How do you feel, Matt? Has it still sunk in?
I feel pretty good. I mean, it's still a great win. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. So I feel good about it. And it's weird what that does to your outlook for the rest of the season when you have a win like what we saw on Saturday, especially compared to how I felt after the Virginia loss and thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a long year. But all hope has been restored.
All hope has been restored. I've gone from thinking we might be like 5-7 to, you know, 11-1 is now the question. And in honor of beating Texas, I just cracked open a delicious Dr. Pepper.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Ah, it's a Texas-based soft drink, so I thought I would drink it in their honor. The can opened up really easily, Matt, just like the Texas defense. yes, I went there. Hey, you fired your defensive coordinator. No one can be that, like, defensive about their defense. Their defense was terrible. But, Matt, before we get to that portion of our discussion, let's talk a little bit of Taysom Hill, okay? So
Taters?
So Taters.
That's what they're calling him now, Taters.
I am pretty sure I'm never going to call him that.
Greg Wrubell referred to him as Taters on Twitter today.
Well, if
Greg Wrubell does it, I mean, it's being done.
Well, it's being done and it's legit. Did
that come up? Has that come up in your conversation?
No, I didn't see that on Twitter. I would have quizzed him about Taters.
Oh, he was throwing. He threw Taters right out there.
Yeah, we got to come up with a better nickname. But there is a blog out there, Brandon Ogletree, the former BYU linebacker. Ogletree Football. Unfortunately, it's not working right now. But I read earlier today, he made this awesome comparison, I think, in running style, at least, between Taysom Hill and a former Cougar. And a lot of people have been talking to Steve Young. I think it's a terrible comp. Number one, it's like 30 years old. And number two, I don't think it's actually very, very accurate, right, in their styles of play. But he made the comparison with Luke Staley, former running back Luke Staley. Matt, what do you think about that comparison? Same size, this kind of downhill, like find the hole and then explode running style. It's at first when I saw the two pictures next to each other, I thought Brandon had made a mistake, and then I was like, that's genius.
It's actually a really interesting comparison, and it makes you think about a couple of different things. In my opinion, at least it made me think about the evolution of the offense over time and kind of where the offense is, well, at least what we saw this last Saturday. You know, when you started thinking about, you know, Luke Staley and the things that he did and what he meant to this team and the teams that he played on and to the program, and you think about a quarterback fulfilling that same type of role, you know, because I agree that there is a point, there's absolutely a point of comparison there, but to look at it and say that, I mean, it's the quarterback that we're talking about. And when you talk about Luke Staley, I mean, just, you know, this whole find the hole and explode, running, you know, putting his nose in there, running into people. And now you're talking about your quarterback. It's really just when I think about it in those terms, it's a fascinating comparison.
Yeah, it is a fascinating comparison. Obviously, it's not a perfect comparison either because of the positional differences, right?
Well, and that's the point, right? When you do something like this, it's not that everything is the same, but if you identify a few things that are, it creates some really interesting food for thought.
Yeah, absolutely. So another comparison that was brought up on Twitter, Matt, by the Irish Mexican at Bullishism and in our tweet bag, out of our tweet bag, is he has here...
Tweet bag!
Fairly or not, fans are comparing Hill to Tebow. What think ye? And then he puts in parentheses, i.e. great runner, an accurate passer, will to win, etc. Okay, let me put something first of all between all of this and Tebow. There's a lot of directions we could go on this. Tim Tebow. Let's talk about Tim Tebow as a college player, okay? I think his inaccuracy as a pro has diminished his diminished people to the point where they are thinking, oh, he was inaccurate as a college passer, okay? Right. Senior year at Florida completed 67.8% of his passes which was, you know, not the tops of the world, but it was seventh in the country. Okay.
That's still pretty good
for over 9 yards per attempt, which was good for fourth in the country. So
for a guy who's dropping the ball down below his waist on the backswing, right? That used to just bother everybody.
Correct. In college, forget about the pros. I don't care about the NFL. I mean, I care about the NFL. I love the NFL.
Yeah, you might want to clarify that.
I don't care evaluating Taysom Hill or Tim Tebow or whomever at the college level. I'm not talking about their pro abilities. So Tim Tebow was an extremely accurate college quarterback. He completed a high percent of passes, and it wasn't just dink and dunk. So I think, quite frankly, the Tim Tebow comparison as a runner is might be accurate. What do you think, Matt? Tim Tebow, Hill?
I think it's interesting as a runner. I think it does draw some interesting comparisons, but I'm not as sold on it until I've seen a little bit more of what Taysom Hill is gonna really look like over the long term before I start really feeling like there's some serious comparison there, which I guess is difficult for me to say when I was just talking about how interesting the Luke Staley comparison is. But and, you know, as a runner, I do see some of that. You know, this whole, like, I'm not afraid to get hit. I'm going to run up in there. Right. I'm going to lower the shoulder. You know, fiery personality and all this kind of stuff, you know, creating big plays. So yeah, there is some of that same feeling to it.
Sure. There could be some, but I think those are lazy, quite frankly, comparisons that people are making. I thought the Staley one was much more nuanced, and because I don't think Tebow's nearly as fast as Hill. I mean, when Hill hits that second gear after he hits the hole, I mean, he runs past defensive backs. I mean, don't get me wrong, Tebow was a fantastic runner. He was more of a power runner. Not that Hill can't do that, but I think he was a little bigger, and I think that was more of his style. Hill is like, man, when he hits that second gear, and do not try to tackle his legs. I will tell you that.
No,
right now.
You're never going to grab those things. They're moving way too fast.
Do not ankle tackle him. He is not your typical fall down quarterback because I touched his shoelace.
Unless you're that guy Harris from Virginia.
Well, that was actually
you're going to get a shoelace. That was a good play on that guy.
That was a good play. And plus, I stand by what I said last week on the podcast. I don't think maybe it was his first game back. Maybe he was a little worried about the knee.
Maybe there's 3 feet of water on the field.
Maybe there's three. Whatever the reason, he did not look like the same dude against Virginia as he did, besides, you know, the huge gaping holes and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, let's. So, Matt, overall, was this one of the funnest games ever to watch? Is it too soon to say something like that? Is this one of the most fun, maybe not the most memorable, there's no, like, you know, Beck to Harleen in the end zone type of play to win it. But, man, wasn't this a blast to watch?
It was as much fun as I've had watching a BYU football game in a long time.
Yeah.
It was just the watching the offense click like that was a ton of fun. The defense, I felt like, looked really good. And the play calling, it was interesting. It provided for some real excitement. You know, I felt like you could watch it kind of develop and understand kind of what they were trying to get accomplished. And they scored a lot of points, you know, when you're putting up that kind of yards. And then it got to the point where I was thinking about our conversation and the over-under on Virgil Carter's record. And, you know, we've talked about, is Taysom Hill going to break it? And I was, by the end of the third quarter, I said, oh, this is over. The record's going to, I think I texted you that.
Yes,
the record's going down tonight. And he came really close. And so it's always fun to see your team, you know, the team that you cheer for, succeed like that, put up that type of a performance, especially after as low as everybody was following the Virginia loss. So, yeah, I mean, is this like a A&M in 96 win or Beck to Harleen type of moment? I don't know that 5-10 years from now we'll be talking about this game that way. Is this, you know, beating Miami in Provo? You know, probably not, but it sure was it's the most fun I've had watching a game in a long time.
So, Virgil Carter update. Taysom Hill has 301 yards rushing in two games. The single season record for a BYU quarterback is 474.
So we could see that go down against Utah.
You could see it go down against Utah. Yes. I don't think you will, and we'll preview that whole game next week. So we're not going to
We won't be previewing it next year.
No, we will not. It will not be on the schedule next year. So it's almost like this is going to be the Irish-Mexican show for a minute. At Bullishism on Twitter, he asked a question about the defense, Matt, and I'll transition to this. He says, did Fua's draft stock rise? How about Daniels and Manu? Do we feel better with the D going forward? Now, forget about draft stock for a second. How do you feel about the D going forward? We both were pretty bullish on the defense, mm-hmm. with some concerns about the defensive backfield, specifically the corners. I think Sorensen is very solid as a safety. Do you feel differently now, or after two games, do we kind of feel the way we did about them 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago?
Well, I was, you know, with you, I'm pretty optimistic about the defense, but still cautious.
Sure.
And the comment that, and the comment I think I made earlier was that I felt that they would be able to make up for some of the issues in the defensive backfield with schemes and personnel at other positions kind of picking it up. And I think that's what we've seen, right? I mean, the defensive line has performed very well. They're still creating opportunities for Kyle Van Noy to do his thing, even after losing Ziggy to the NFL. Sorensen is great. I feel very comfortable with him. I think we did see late in the Texas game, they did start to take advantage of some of the one-on-one matchups with corners. And I think teams are going to continue to do that. But I believe that the defense is in a position where they've got the right people, where they can move them around, get into the right place, and help cover up if the cornerbacks start to get into any real trouble against the passing game. So I actually feel a little bit better about the defense than I did before, because they actually did it. They covered up for some of that deficiency.
I actually completely disagree with you. I don't think we can cover up for that deficiency. I think everyone is lamenting the defensive play calling and coaching of Texas, okay? And rightfully so. I don't know what they were doing, quite
well,
frankly.
Well, anytime the coaching staff gets together and starts yelling at each other on the sideline, like,
bad
that's
sign.
A bad sign.
Bad sign. on the offensive side, they were terrible. They kept running it up the middle and not, I mean, I would have thrown 50 times in that game.
But they didn't figure that out until late.
But what's there to figure it out? Like, I don't know. Like, what's Major Applewhite doing? Like, what is he looking at? I mean, it's nothing against our cornerbacks, but we're talking about third string guys here. You know what I mean? These guys are not, you know, and as much as I like Robinson Daniel, I mean, he's great in run support. He proved himself to be a pretty effective blitzer in this game, coming off the edge as a corner blitz. So I think he has value. I don't think he's yet shown that he can cover those really good wide receivers. And I would pick on him if I was an offensive coordinator. I would pick on him until he proved to me that he could do these guys one-on-one or force Sorensen and the safety or another safety over there constantly so that it opens up something else in the middle of the field instead of running it up the gut against Manu Maliuna, who's basically was double teamed quite frequently in the run game and still blew them up. So let's talk about him for a little bit. I mean, he's been good when he's played. He's been injured a lot. I don't remember him ever being this good. I mean, he was, I thought, spectacular in this game and was quite good against Virginia as well.
Well, he's getting done exactly what the defense needs. He needs to draw a double team. Somebody up in that front has to require two blockers in order for the rest of the scheming to work. And I think that's what is going to help cover up. Because I don't think that, you know, we've got NFL corners or anything. I do worry about them. But I think that the minute a team starts dropping back to try and pick on them, they're going to see a whole bunch of stuff change up front. And their quarterback's going to start getting hit. And that's going to make the difference. I think that's – if Manu Maliuna can draw those double teams with his pass rush – then they will scheme their way into protecting those cornerbacks. And they might have to give them those cushions like they were giving them late. And I don't know why they didn't just start doing, you know, these little 5-yard, you know, and kind of dink and dunk it up the field. But and those cushions drive me crazy. They drive a lot of BYU fans crazy. But in this situation we're in right now, that's really probably the safest way to approach it. And then you just get to the quarterback. And we were getting back there, getting real serious penetration with a 3-man rush.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if you can do that, you can be a little slow on the corner.
Okay, so we both agree that the defense is good and will continue to be good. So we'll move past the defense. Let's now move back to Hill for a second, Matt. The one concern with him has been accuracy. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this. We got a bunch of tweetback questions. I think it's kind of ridiculous to all of a sudden as fans be like, well, you know, they rushed for 500 yards, but he did complete 33% of his passes. I get it. I get why people are concerned, but I don't know that these two games represent the definitive data set on whether Taysom Hill can actually throw the football or not.
Yeah, I don't know if we know that yet. I share the same concern everybody does about, you know, the completion percentage, but you know, it comes down to me as far as the offense goes is I believe, you know, what they think they heard Taysom Hill say to Coach and I on the sideline was, I'm just taking what the defense has given me.
Right.
And in that game, they were giving it up on those read option plays.
Take that 15 yards, Mr. Hill. We're not going right. to stop you.
That's pretty much what was going on, right?
Yes.
So in that case, like he didn't need to be completing a Tebow-esque 67%
nice.
Of his passes.
I
right?
see what you did there.
You like that?
Yeah.
But I do think we have seen enough of him to know that he is a better passer than that. And with the consistent Hoffman, I think it's going to still spell trouble in the passing game for opposing defenses.
All right. So we're not answering any – I mean, we got like 6 Hill accuracy questions on Twitter. We're not going to address any of those specifically. Thanks for sending them in, though. Let's move on from that, Matt, to Let's see here. I wanted to pull from the tweet bag. Now I can't find the question. Oh, here it is. So, nope, I didn't find it. Don't worry. This will all be edited out. let's see here. So let's talk about going forward, Matt, our opponents. Okay. So as we look forward, you know, we did our predictions at the beginning of the season about who we thought we would beat and who we thought we wouldn't and all that kind of stuff. Now we have more data. We've got 2 weeks of data for most everybody. So I thought there was a question here from, and I lost it again, from, I think it was from Jed Higginson at Jed Higgy. Yes, after 2 weeks of games, which BYU opponents look the strongest, and have we changed our predictions? He asked us that on Twitter. So, Matt, who looks good right now of our opponents going forward?
I feel like that's still kind of tough to read. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure how good Utah is.
Hey, they put up 70 on Weber.
Well, right. What does that even mean? I don't know what that means.
But you
know,
they gave up 500 yards to Utah State.
Right. But maybe Utah State's as good as people think they were,
yes.
Or maybe they're not. You know, so I think it's still a little bit early. I feel like I don't, you know, I watched and rewatched, you know, 8 quarters of football for this team, and I'm still not really sure I know what their upside is yet. So I don't know that I'm ready to adjust any of my expectations on the upside for any of these opponents. I do have some feelings about the downside, though.
Yeah, I'll tell you this much. I think Utah might be better than I thought. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Might be. I think Boise State's worse than I thought.
Absolutely. I so absolutely agree.
That's
with
one
that.
I feel pretty strongly about. I think Wisconsin is about who I thought they were so far.
They are who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were. Sorry, Danny Green. You know, all that is true, but Wisconsin's played pansy, so maybe that's why I probably don't feel any differently than I did at the beginning of the season. As far as Georgia Tech goes, I think they might be a little better than I thought, but
yeah,
I'm not.
Georgia Tech's probably better than we thought.
I'm not going to get too excited about it. Everybody else, I kind of feel about the same. Notre Dame, I did not think was going to be as good as they were last year. So I think some people thought that defense would be as good, and I, you know, but again, they were playing Michigan, and Michigan's got like weapons. You know, their third string wide receiver could probably start at most schools, right?
Their quarterback was wearing the number 98. I really don't know what else to say about
yes,
that game.
and ripping people up, except for that terrible, interception in the end zone. I don't know if you saw that, but holy shnikes! If I were a Michigan
Yikes.
Fan, which I'm not, I would have been a little upset. But they won, so I the teams that I think have moved up and down, in my opinion. Mostly it's Boise State not looking as good. Yeah, they come back and beat up on some nobody, but they did not look good the week before. So,
no.
But I'm not going to change much about our predictions. I think give us next week maybe, and maybe we can talk about another week's worth of games. None for BYU, of course, but for some of our other opponents might help us along here a little bit. So Matt, let's switch to that. To that Utah game. You had an exchange, I think, with a friend of yours who's a Utah fan. I saw this on Cougar Board, same line of reasoning, and talked to a Utah fan friend of mine, which was, goes something like this. We played Utah State. We contained Chucky Keaton. And we won't have a problem with Taysom Hill. So, Matt, why do you agree or disagree with that sentiment from Utah fans?
Chucky Keaton is not Taysom Hill. I don't think Chucky Keaton runs for 270 yards against Texas, even the defense that we just played. Partially because the offense works a little bit differently. And the other, he's a different type of player. So I think the comparison is difficult. The other piece that really gets ignored in that line of reasoning is the other side of the football. You know, you can bottle, maybe you'll bottle him up for 150 yards, right? But if you can't move the football down the field, it's not going to matter. Now, Utah did throw for 300 yards against the Utah State defense, and so I expect them to go after our corners really hard. But I also expect no shortage of Kyle Van Noy's number being called. So while I kind of understand the line of reasoning, and I think I probably do the same thing sometimes, at the end of the day, I think you're ignoring large portions of the game, and the comparison is not really all there.
Sure, sure. I totally agree with everything you said. I also think there's one other massive problem with their line of reasoning. Chucky Keaton lit them up. He passed for 300 yards. He ran for 85 and scored by himself with three touchdowns.
Hey, we kept him under 100 yards.
And
though.
400 yards of offense. You didn't contain Chucky Keaton. He played with your defense all night. So maybe you stopped him on one key drive. Like, the point that you made of the comparisons bad, yes. I don't think at this stage of their careers they're the same type of quarterback. The other comparison is you didn't contain Chucky Keaton. If anything, you showed you're vulnerable to a quarterback that can move around. So I think Utah's defense is going to be much better coached and play better than Texas? Absolutely. I think that's true. I do not think that if you gave me Taysom Hill rushing yards over under 150 against Utah, I'm taking the under, you know? But nothing that Utah did against Chucky Keaton makes me go, wow, they figured out how to stop a mobile quarterback. The other part is, like you said, the other side of the ball. They're not going to put up – they put up 450 yards against Utah State. I don't think they break 400 against us.
No, definitely not.
And they might. I mean, things happen.
They won't.
Like 2010. Or was that 2011? When was that? The 54 to whatever?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I tried to block that game out of my brain.
There was no such game.
There was no such game. There's no such game. It doesn't exist. So Matt,
I vacated that win in my memory.
You vacated that win.
If the NCAA can do it and it never happened, so can I.
That's fair enough. So Matt, this has been a fun week. I mean, we got a lot of energy in the podcast. Fans on Twitter and Cougar Board have tons of energy right now, right?
Oh, people are really excited about BYU football right now, and it's a fun time. After a win like that, that's just fun. Yeah. This is why you want to follow this stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Matt, let's finish with a couple of tweet bag questions, okay, so that we didn't cover. One of which I thought was a fun one was from first-time tweet bagger, Spencer Rosenhan. That's at Spencer Rosenhan on Twitter, who happens to be a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. Congratulations this year, Spencer, on a fantastic, great team, fun team to watch, the Pirates this year. That is the baseball portion of our show. Where does Taysom Hill's performance rank in BYU's best QB games in the last 10 years? Matt, I'm not going to make us go through a whole list here, but it's kind of hard to compare. But where do you rank that when the guy rushes for 200 and some odd yards? You know, doesn't have a great game thrown, but does this rank up with some of those Max Hall and John Beck games and from the last 10 years, or is it apples and oranges?
Adam, what's the record for quarterback rushing yards in a game at BYU?
Oh, he blasted past that. I'll have to look it up while you're talking.
Okay. So, yeah, this game gets talked about for years, and for 10 years in that sense, that performance. Now, like I talked about before, does this get talked about, like the win over A&M and stuff like that? Probably not. But does Taysom Hill's performance in this game get talked about 10 years from now? Yes. 10 years from now, when you're writing a piece on LoyalCougars.com and you're doing your whole quarterback season ranking stuff, does this game get a mention in that write-up? It absolutely does. Does this game possibly even define his season? Oh, yeah. So I think it definitely gets into that conversation where you talk about game performances over the past 10 years. It definitely is among the top. Now, where to rank that, like, I'd probably you'd have to really look and do some research. But it definitely belongs in that conversation. Absolutely.
It absolutely does. It is I mean, it was remarkable. And I get that the defense on the other side did not play particularly well. I'm not ignorant to that fact, but I do know that you have to hit those holes, and he outran linebackers and defensive backs. Yeah, there were some bad angles, but sometimes he just flat out ran them, even though I think in a lot of cases, if they had looked at film last week, they probably thought the angle they were taking would have worked, but it didn't. Yeah. And I think because of that, you have to give a lot of credit to Hill and to the block. I mean, we haven't really given kudos to the offensive line like we should have, or the wide receivers for blocking. The catching still needs a little work.
But the offensive line looked way better than it did the week before. I don't know what they did to those guys in practice the week in between. And I know that, you know, we switched him around. He didn't rotate people in and out and stuff. And, you know, he slid people up and down the line a little bit, but it worked. You know, and I think, if I remember correctly, the record for rushing yards in a game by a quarterback at BYU is 273 by Virgil Carter. And so this is the second most rushing yards a quarterback at BYU has ever done in one game. And it was against Texas. I mean, a storied program. So, I mean, this is a performance that will be remembered.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think it will be one you talk about. I mean, obviously it becomes a note in the guy's career if Hill ends up becoming one of the better quarterbacks we've ever had. But even if he ends up, you know, being mediocre, it's still a game you'll talk about, right? Yeah. Still that memorable. Another fun question we had on Twitter was from Andre Hutchins, not a first-time tweetbagger. That's @AC_Hutchins. Traveled from Nevada to see the Texas game. Good for you, Andre. You picked a good game. Best BYU game he says he's ever been to. What is your favorite BYU game that you attended? And I'm going to assume that means, you know, in person, Matt. What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite that you've attended in person?
Yeah, this isn't even close for me. 1996 Texas A&M in Provo.
That's a pretty cool game.
It was an awesome game. It was the first game I ever went to. It was the first game I saw in person. Not any game, but the first BYU football game I saw in person.
Is that true?
And it was the beginning of a remarkable season.
That's the first game you ever saw in person for
BYU? It was the first game I saw in person.
That's wow, right. You're spoiled.
I mean, yeah, that's... I mean, how could I ever turn away after that?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Mine, you know, I have not been to many road games with BYU, actually very few. So most of all my memories are in Provo. And I'd have to say that though it wasn't, it was a really good season, 2001 season, but the game against Utah, comeback victory led by Brandon Doman, was probably my favorite. And I think I've told that story on the podcast in the past, so I won't retell it, but Gennaro Guilford catches the interception to seal the win as Utah was driving down the field. That's probably my highlight. But I'm hoping that when we beat Wisconsin later this year and we're there, that'll be my new favorite. Now, I am not actually predicting that, so...
So look, Matt, at you trolling all the Wisconsin fans that listen to the podcast.
Yes,
Let the emails roll in.
Speaking of Twitter and email, you can tweet at us @BYU_RiseShout. You can email us adam@loyalcougars, matt@loyalcougars, follow that with .com, unless if this is your first time using the internet. And something else that exciting happened on Twitter, Matt. We were followed by someone called the BYU Sock Monkey.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just glad the BYU has its own Sock Monkey account.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a Sock Monkey account, BYU's a good fit.
I heard that's how you really know you've arrived, is when your school has a Sock Monkey Twitter account.
Is there a Matt Mangum Sock Monkey Twitter account?
I don't know, but there should be.
There, you better
believe
it.
And if there's not one within 24 hours of this podcast being posted, I might have to go and create my own.
Yeah, there's no doubt you're probably working on it right now.
That would be sad.
That would be sad. Well, Matt, do you have anything to add before I get to our last important topic that's non-BYU related?
I just wish there was a game this weekend.
Yes. Yes.
That would be pretty awesome. But I feel a lot better about the season. I'm excited about it. Let's watch some more football. Let's see some more of those. Let's see some more Taysom Hill.
Let's see some taters. Gosh, I can't call him that. So Matt, last question, very important, potentially life altering. iPhone 5C, are you getting one? The announcement was today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Live under a rock?
No, I saw it. But I actually recently got an iPhone 5. So I don't know that I will get the C. But if I can work out some kind of trade-in deal like they're doing, then I might do it.
Because now you can just press, it reads your fingerprint. The NSA will have all sorts of new information about you.
You think the NSA doesn't already have that?
That is a fair point.
They're probably the ones that gave it to Apple.
I actually, my favorite part about this whole thing with Apple is on Facebook, Twitter, news things, Apple is dead. Like, I mean, and I'm not an Apple defender, nor am I an Apple detractor. I'm fairly neutral. I own several Apple products, but I own several products that aren't. But I always love these announcements because the Apple, like, diehards are like, oh my gosh, they've reinvented themselves. And the Apple detractors, see, they're dead again. It's always funny to me. But I will probably get a 5C. I've got a 4S. I'm out of my contract. It may be time to upgrade and do slow motion of me drinking a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, that's what we all need.
Oh, I'll post it.
Oh, please, please do. Please do that.
So one other reminder, of course, Matt, is we are now doing video podcasts, short little snippets. Check those out at loyalcougars.com. We always post them on Twitter as well. So we will be back next week, probably a little earlier in the week due to our work schedules. But we'll definitely preview the big rivalry game for you. Check out all the coverage on the rivalry game and any of the other sports stories. And basketball is starting. Practice starts here in the next couple of weeks. So look for a lot of good coverage on BYU basketball as well. So thank you, of course, for downloading. Thank you for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!